This is a very non-Sarah 17 organization. The intent here was to have breadth and to minimize depth, which is ironic in a symposium on drainage. But the top two inches, that's right. We have a phosphorus bias here, so there's a reason. The intent of this morning was basically to provide context, and so hopefully those of you who've stayed around, we're also assuming that everyone here is dedicated to the cause and isn't flitting around from one talk to another, and that's an assumption. So we're going to move now to a bit more on the management. Again, the speakers have the time constraint of 10 minutes, but they get to focus more on individual studies instead of having to kind of jump around on the lay of the land. And so it's my real pleasure to introduce Matt Moore, who's had some really exciting results vis-a-vis a phosphorus uptake in vegetated ditches, and I'll let him talk. Fat Matt.
Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I typically do pesticide research, so I would be the anomaly for this group. I've been working in drainage ditches for about the last 18 years, focusing on pesticides, and just within the last few years, we've been doing some research looking at nutrients, because in agricultural runoff, it's not just a pesticide or a nutrient. It's usually the kitchen sink with everything coming down, and especially where I work in the Mississippi Delta, there literally sometimes are kitchen sinks that come down some of these drainage ditches. I don't have to kind of expound on this. We know that phosphorus is a problem, so I'm going to skip right through there. I do want to put in the obligatory bugs and bunnies slide because I am an ecologist trained in aquatic toxicology. Phosphorus is a huge problem with macroinvertebrates in streams. So I had to throw that in there for myself. If we look at the lower Mississippi River Valley, where I work, where I grew up, where I live now, we have about 250 million pounds of phosphorus, which is being delivered from four major upstream river basins. And then just the lower Mississippi River basin itself contributes an additional 75 million pounds of phosphorus. So we're dealing with 326 million pounds of phosphorus going into the Gulf of Mexico. And if we targeted all of the high and moderate treatment sites using best management practices, it's been suggested that we can expect about a 22% reduction in the phosphorus levels that are reaching the Gulf of Mexico. So even our best laid plans have some work to do with them. Previous speakers, and I'm sure speakers later on today, have discussed and will discuss the issue of legacy phosphorus, which in the Mississippi Delta we have a huge problem with. We have great background levels of phosphorus, so the phosphorus is not uncommonly a problem in the Mississippi Delta. This is one of my favorite slides that I use. I enjoy floating the streams around Mississippi and where I grew up in Arkansas, not so much like this. I prefer to stay in a canoe or maybe even an inner tube. But 1 gram of phosphorus will produce 100 grams of algal biomass. For those of us that are in the government, if that was our TSP return, we'd be doing pretty good. All right. As I said, I work a lot with drainage ditches, dealing mainly with pesticides, but we're going to talk about phosphorus today. And my goal has been to really emphasize the use of the vegetation within the drainage ditch and to allow the vegetation to stay within the drainage ditch, which, if you know farmers, that's not exactly an easy assumption to come across with. Charles Ramser, who was the director of the engineering division of the old Soil Conservation Service, a great leader, great visionary, said this in 1947. The presence of vegetation in a drainage ditch indicates that the landowner is not deriving the full benefit for which the ditch was intended. So it just goes to show you that even the best guys get it wrong sometimes, because vegetation in drainage ditches is very important for mitigation of contaminants. So let me just talk to you real briefly about three different studies that we've done. We started on the microcosm level at the National Sedimentation Laboratory where I work, using just some basic horse troughs, very easy to use, constructed wetland systems. We placed three different plant species, Sparganum americanum, which is American burrweed, Lyrsia orozoides, which is rice cutgrass, and Typha latifolia, which is a broadleaf cattail. Three very common species that you find in agricultural drainage ditches. We made a mixture of sediments and pesticides, put them into a mixing chamber, and then used calibrated piston pumps to deliver our runoff for a certain hydraulic retention time. Within these studies, so we dosed these studies for 6 hours, and then we let them sit basically for 2 days, and then we flushed them again with clean water, water that's not been amended, to simulate the effects of what these plants might see out in nature, because plants don't get just one slug and then that's it in a ditch. They're going to receive continual inputs, especially during the rainy season. So just to show you briefly some of our results from the dissolved phosphate, that the loads of dissolved phosphate, what happened if we look at the different types of pesticides. If you look at the percent decrease after 6 hours, which is the fifth line down, everything kind of looks the same, even with our unvegetated control. You'd think, well, plants really aren't doing too much. But if you look specifically at the rice cut grass and the typha, the percent total decrease was a 51% decrease in the load for cut grass, and for cattail was 53% decrease in the load. Our unvegetated control actually had an increase in dissolved phosphate. And the reason is the flush. If you look at the percentage that was lost after the flush, the sparganum had made great strides initially, but then it was not really bound and it took off after the flush. So the plant didn't do that good of a job. And again, you can see the same thing within our unvegetated control. When there was just sediment there, the phosphorus tended to flow right through the system. If we look at the total orthophosphate, a little bit different results. Not so good for our mitigation after 6 hours. Everything was pretty much the same, and the reason that our overall decrease was fairly pitiful was because we lost a lot after the flush. And this is really one of the first studies on this scale that we've seen, and it was trying just to get a picture of what might be going on out in the field. So we started on the small scale, then we wanted to step this up into two drainage ditches within the Mississippi Delta, one vegetated, one unvegetated. The emphasis was the same. We put a slug in of nutrients and pesticides, but again, we're focusing on the nutrients. And then we monitored those throughout the ditch, spatially and temporally. And if you ignore all of the nitrogen aspects and just look at the phosphorus, you would see that my idea did not work very well. The non-vegetated ditch, basically, there was no difference in the load reduction of looking whether you're talking about the dissolved or the total phosphorus. So we started asking some questions, you know, why might this have taken place? We know it works well for pesticides. And we came up with a suggestion that maybe we need to increase our ditch retention time because the system was flowing fairly well. So then we did some alterations at another site using low-grade weirs. And, of course, the idea behind using the low-grade weirs is to increase our water residence time, which will mean we'll have more contact available for the contaminants that we are studying. This was done on a research site that was specifically designed for us at Arkansas State University. We have 8 different ditch systems. And we implemented some low-grade weirs and did some comparisons between weir and non-weir. You have to be careful. You can't say weird and non-weird. People get confused. But the important thing is we have to remember that there's a delicate balance when we're talking about drainage ditches, because it's all about water movement. The farmers want the water to move through the system. We want to keep the plants in the system. So there's this nice little balance that we try to take place. So our first year of study after these weir and non-weir systems were implemented, again, kind of gave us the similar results to what our field study had shown just previously. There's not a lot of difference that we see if we increase the ditch residence time in these particular systems. Now, this research, we think we can pretty much answer that because these were new systems. The phosphorus, the ditches themselves were probably acting just as a sink, so it really didn't matter too much whether or not we had a weir or they weren't weird. So if you look at our examples and our research so far, they were kind of crappy. And that usually goes over much better in fisheries groups. But anyway, crappy, crappie, whatever. So anyway, you never want to be accused of having crappy research. So we wanted to then take that and expand that into another area. So what's a plant that is aquatic, that needs nitrogen, needs phosphorus to grow? I grew up in northeast Arkansas, grew up on a rice farm. Why not use rice? What the heck? All right, so we used two different ditch systems with some replication, one with rice, one that was bare. We collected water, sediment, and plant samples. We had V-notch weirs where we could measure the flow. We knew everything that was coming in and out of the system, really had it kind of down pat. And we were looking for some great results. And what we found was the ditch was able to retain about, with rice, was able to retain about 93% of the phosphate. And then our bare system retained about 98%. So again, we're kind of at a mixed bag here when we talk about vegetation and phosphorus mitigation in ag drainage ditches. Scaling issues, what we've come across, we can do it very easily with a small scale when we go up to the field. There's obviously a lot more involved, a lot of other issues that come into play. A lot of research has looked at the uptake of phosphorus by roots as opposed to shoots. And in our research, we were focused strictly on the shoots, what contact those shoots had with the phosphorus. It depends on what form of phosphorus you're talking about. That's a no-brainer, especially for this group. Plant senescence is also an issue. What happens in these ditches in the winter when the plants die? Do they release phosphorus? Do you cause another problem? Those are issues that we're having to deal with. And then, just frankly, what is sediment's role? Robbie Kroger and I did a study where we looked at drainage ditches across the lower Mississippi alluvial valley, and what we found is that most drainage ditches are acting as sinks. There's a great sorption potential for the sediment in a lot of these ditches. But I always revert back to one of the smarter men in science when things don't go my way. And Albert Einstein said, if we knew what we were doing, it wouldn't be research, would it? So I'll end with that.